Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies, another thrilling episode. I'm joined once again by Bill Bregoli.
Hey there.
And Bill McCuddy.
That's me.
And, you know, we're going to do something a little different this time because probably the highest grossing film, Star Wars The Force Awakens, opens this week. So we're going to pretty much devote most of the show to talking about that. There are some on-demand movies, as this is the after show to our TV show, which airs on New York One locally and Time Warner Cable nationally, called Talking Pictures on Demand. We'll talk about a couple of new on-demand things towards the end of the show, including a Russell Brand documentary called The Emperor's New Clothes and Goodnight Mommy, a horror film, and something also, He Named Me Malala, which is a documentary on the Nobel Prize winning young woman Malala. But we're going to talk about Star Wars The Force Awakens, and let's get right to it.
We made it in after a
no
long
guests,
line.
No phones.
No plus ones, no phones.
No nothing.
Disney clamped down. And I'll tell you what was interesting for me, Neil and Bill, is that it was so obvious there were no advanced screenings because Whoopi Goldberg was sitting next to Andy Cohen, sitting next to...
I saw Hoda Kotb.
Hoda came over and bringing concession stuff for Willie Geist and Myro and the transgender guy, the transparent guy was there, Jeffrey Tambor. It was really
clear. Yeah, there was one screen.
You were going to see it last night.
I kind of felt that almost every colleague that I have in the entire movie critic business was basically in that room at the Talking Picture Show where you rotate like nine people, they were all there. Like everybody
Michael
I could possibly.
Michael Gelman from Live with Michael and Kelly was there with his kids doing their homework in line. He was helping them get their homework done.
All right, spoilers.
And
okay?
No more name dropping either.
And you might have seen
no
this. You might have seen the movie already. I don't know. It opens Friday. But, in this one, the Empire, which was destroyed at the end of Return of the Jedi, has resurrected themselves. I think they're called the First Order now.
Right.
And the Resistance is trying to defeat them. That's basically the plot. You have a new cast of characters. Oscar Isaac, who I think is really great, who plays a Resistance fighter pilot.
Yeah.
He's terrific.
Really,
he reminded me of a young Han Solo. He's in there. Daisy Ridley, who's the female lead,
which was a big shock for me. I mean, I knew nothing as a non-fan going into this, so I had no idea one of the lead performances was going to be an Emily Blunt kind of...
She's great.
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow kind of kick-ass chick.
Very
she was awesome.
Yeah, and she's like plays a scavenger who joins the Resistance, and John Boyega
Stormtrooper gone bad.
Stormtrooper who goes rogue. He leaves the...
I gotta tell you, I thought Stormtroopers were robots. That's how stupid I am on Star Wars. And I've said this to a couple of people, and they're going, oh yeah, I didn't know that either. But if you take those helmets off, here's this very impressive black actor who is playing... I think he's a little like, am I in a Star Wars movie for like the first half an hour of the film? And then he seems to get comfortable in the role. But I think you'd have to agree that he's sort of like a gosh gee whiz kind of a
I liked him. I mean, let's face it, Star Wars, we've always had this debate about, I'm a Star Trek person more than the Star Wars guy, and Star Trek is science fiction, and Star Wars is science fantasy. And, you know, although it has universal appeal, it is Bane more than kids, and I think that gee whiz factor from Boyega actually works to advantage. The villain in the piece is played by Adam Driver, who you might know from Girls, and he plays
tons of little independent movies.
Right, and he does like he's like the heir apparent to Darth Vader.
Darth Vader Jr.
And, he's wearing this Darth Vader mask. And I started thinking about it through the movie. You know, Darth Vader needed to wear that helmet and that mask because I think he had a breathing problem and he needed that mask to get oxygen. Like when they took it off in the end of The Return of the Jedi, which is where, by the way, this movie picks up.
They could only afford James Earl Jones' voice. They couldn't afford
this movie picks up, I think, 30 or 40 years after Return of the Jedi. He's wearing this with that same voice like this. He doesn't really need to wear that. The movie, I like the movie. I think it's infinitely better than those three prequels that Lucas did. I think J.J. Abrams brings a fresh approach to it, although not totally fresh. Look, it's not an original movie. I'm telling you, it's like a...
Hey, you know
it's
what?
Like a greatest hits checklist.
We got to find out what a nerd thinks.
Good idea. And who better than one of our favorite cast members or some of the
She sits in on the
guests.
Podcast. She sits She's in on here. The television show, calling in to talk about Star Wars. She was at the screening last night. Perry, what did you think?
It is pretty much exactly what I wanted as a fan of the movie and also as someone who wanted a high-quality movie that makes something more of what I loved before. And J.J. Abrams really just kind of blew my mind in the fact that I thought he did almost a perfect job of capturing the spirit of the original movies, but taking it a step further, both in a storytelling perspective and visually, because the visuals are kind of above and beyond what they were way back when, but where they're still embracing the texture those visuals had. I love the fact that he did mostly practical creatures in this film. It made a huge difference.
I heard he used real models as opposed to CGI, like the way Lucas did in the original. They were real miniature models of those
spacecraft. Right, and there were real sets this time, too, instead of lots of little models. I think it really showed.
Is that true, Perry? I mean, in your research on it?
Yeah, I mean, there's very clearly some CGI elements in the movie, but yeah, there's a lot of puppets and things like that too. You could see that mostly towards the beginning of the movie and in Maz's kind of bar, I don't know what you would call it, like a bar area. I mean, those are mostly practical creatures that were there with them on the set.
That's Yoda is a waitress in that scene. this movie makes.
But don't you think, Perry, as we were talking earlier, that, and it is a very good movie. I mean, there's no question about it. Well, first of all, do you think it'll satisfy diehard Star Wars fans? Or do you think they'll find it to be, again, as we were talking earlier, I think J.J. Abrams took a greatest hits checklist and said, like, oh, okay. Like, you know that scene in the first one when Luke Skywalker was, taking the fighter in between that crevice on the Death Star? Let's do something like that. Oh, Harrison Ford's got snappy lines. Let's do something like, don't you think it was kind of like a big board of all Star Wars, things that are people like, and let's just do variants on that?
There was definitely like a checklist kind of feel to it where he knocked off a lot of things that I did want to see brought back into the new film, but he did it in a way that kind of made me feel part of it and part of the excitement of seeing something again, instead of like, ooh, look, I'm J.J. Abrams, I'm directing a Star Wars movie, so look what I can do now. It wasn't done in that kind of way. It was done in a way where you kind of knew things were coming, and you're like, you know, that feeling like, no way, he's going to do it. Is he going to do it? And then all of a sudden that thing is there. And it's kind of like a fist pumping at the screen kind of reaction. It's exciting. And it works really well into the story. It's not so overtly done where it takes you out of the movie and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And you kind of lose.
All right, so you're a diehard Star Wars fan. Do you think the people that have bought the tickets like 3 months ago and are waiting online overnight, do you think, I mean,
the geek shell in
here. Do you think they're right? The geek factor. Are they going to be love it? Think it's okay? I mean, they're not going to look at it like it was Star Wars Episode One. What do you think?
I think everyone's going to be really satisfied, and I think this is an instance where it was probably well worth standing online or staying up until God knows what hour to buy tickets to some of the first showings, because, I mean, even during our press screening last night, one of the best parts about a screening like that is when you have that communal experience and everyone there is so excited. And
we were all applauding and screaming.
Some of the best screenings for this movie are going to be the midnight ones, the primetime weekend ones. I think people are going to absolutely love it.
So I need to be the naysayer and just go as a fan for you, because I'm not, but I enjoyed the film. Is there anything that disappointed you, or was there anything, if you had to make one nit about it, is there anything you could find fault with?
Yes, there's one distinct part of the movie that I am not a fan of, that I don't want to describe too.
It would be a spoiler.
Detail, because I don't want to spoil anything, but it had something to do with a big villain in the movie that I didn't really like. I didn't really like the visuals. I didn't really think this villain was well integrated into the story. Maybe they're going to do more with this villain further on, but
I think we can talk about that.
You're not talking about Adam Driver.
You're talking about the big hologram that he talks to, right? I mean, I don't think Andy Serkis is
what.
I don't think that's. I agree with Bill. I don't think that's really considered a spoiler.
Very cautious about spoiling anything.
I don't think that's that much of a spoiler, but I do agree with you. And I will full disclosure: Perry and I did email each other after the movie last night. My favorite character is also your favorite character. That BB-8 new droid, which kind of replaced R2-D2, I think is the best thing in the movie.
Oh my God, by far. I mean, I just have a thing for kind of like cute animated pet-like creatures in general. You put something like that in a movie, and odds are I will like it. So I was, when I got my first look at BB-8, that was like top priority with this movie. I couldn't wait to see him in action. Right. And not only was he just as good as I was hoping, but above and beyond, where this droid was such an integral part of this movie. Like, everything
I love the droid.
Mission involves him, and he's capable of a lot.
Love the droid. Right. And if you think about it, a rolling soccer ball with, like, a top hat on it, I mean, which has no... it really expressive, showing sadness and, you know, and happiness, and just and funny. And there's a thing with a lighter. I won't... used it as a spoiler.
Oh, my God.
That's great.
That's a really cute touch. I was laughing, like, 10 minutes after that joke happened.
And he's now on Toy Stores near you.
Right.
Oh, my God.
All right, Perry, thanks for checking in.
He's a lighter.
Thank you for having me.
Perry, if anyone...
I'm sorry to rush this.
No, not at all. And if anyone listening thinks you gave any spoilers away, your email is Perry...
Very funny. No,
all right, Perry, we'll speak to you soon on the podcast and on the Talking Picture Show. Thanks a lot.
Great. All right, bye, guys.
Bye. So, you know, it was really, the thing I liked about the movie was the fact that it was really, it gave me chills. It was great to see, like, all those Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and all the old cast members, like, after so many years to be up on a big screen again. And
right,
I think
we've hung up on Perry, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay, movie sucks, and it's not going to make 10 cents.
Funny.
And I didn't want to say that into her face, but I just feel like this has got a dead stench of loser written on it.
Yeah, I think this movie was... You said you were going to give it an A-minus, Bill?
Yeah, I would give it an A-minus.
What would you give it?
I would, too. The pacing slacked a little bit. There are parts where you can run off to the restroom if you need to.
Yeah, on my Big Apple rating scale, I gave it a 3.5 out of 4 apples, which is sort of like an A-minus. It loses points on the, as I said, on the unoriginality aspect, but it gains so many points because it's an entertaining ride unto itself. I mean, it's really only
about one thing, too, which at the beginning bothered me, and then by the end it didn't, and then when I thought about
it's
this whole universe, every planet, every galaxy, everybody everywhere wants to find out where Luke Skywalker is. And there's a missing map that in itself is missing a piece. And so it's about assembling this map and trying to find Luke Skywalker. And I won't say whether they do or don't, because they're obviously going to make, like, 10 more of these.
No, there's a trilogy. It's a trilogy.
They're going to make 2 more of these, but to start. But that's pretty thin premise for everybody in the whole universe to be chasing this one guy. but, you know, you kind of get lost and forget that, to the movie's credit. I'll also say the movie is really funny. I mean, there are lots of great jokes that fold back on themselves and, try not to look nervous, and somebody else goes, "I'm not," and they go, "No, I was talking to myself." I mean, like, right.
The lighter gag, and I won't tip that up, but there's a gag with a lighter that there's little touches
A lot of the humor is thanks to Harrison Ford, too. He looks like he's actually having fun this time.
Right, and he looks like, he has a great line when somebody says, "Are you Han Solo?" And he said, "I used to be." And so he's playing, like, he still doesn't take any shit from anybody, but, you know, he's obviously older, and Chewie is still there, and then Princess Leia shows up, and, you know, everything we know from the trailer, we're not giving anything away, and then there are a couple of nice, cool surprises in it, so I think
I think the special effects are superb. I really did. I think the action sequences are excellent. There is, like you said, really good doses of humor, which carry you along. Unlike the last three, which were overly serious and just deadly and unfunny. And I mean, the only attempt at humor was that Jar Jar Binks, which was, I mean, everybody hated that. I mean, this humor actually works, you know, to a large extent. And I think there is suspense and drama all along the way. I mean, and there's one big thing that happens.
Well, most of the drama is what next checkbox is going to be checked. I mean, he really does.
Well, that's
does
what I'm saying. It is like they probably took a giant, like, chart and said, okay, right. Harrison Ford makes great wisecracks. Let's get some of that. Okay.
I mean, to a lesser degree, Spectre did that this year with Bond. There were so many little winks and nods to the Bond franchise. But this movie is much bigger and broader in terms of, we're going to show you R2-D2, and we're going to bring
back. And you know
what?
Now that they've gotten all that out of the way, the next one could be even better.
But right. I like this the audience, and it's a jaded audience, it's a critic audience, and you know, but people were cheering when they brought the Millennium Falcon out of mothballs to fly again. It was in a junk heap. All of a sudden the thing takes off in the air and everybody was like, wow, and then
for a jaded room, that was cool.
And Harrison Ford's back at the controls of his old spaceship, you know, and Chewie's next to him, and you know, yeah, they recreated, but that's J.J. Abrams. I mean, look at the Star Trek reboot. Yeah. It's the same thing. Let's look at what people liked from the original and let's try to, you know, kind of recreate it. But that said, the Bond movies, I mean, they're not really, forget about Spectre. I mean, how many Bond movies are there, Bill? Like
23.
All right, 23 Bond movies. So, you know, they're not really original, but you could say, okay, that is, yes, you're going to do the Bond, James Bond, and you're going to have that opening sequence with the iris eye closing, that ba-da-da, right. You know, and you're going to have.
That's actually a gun barrel, but
yeah,
okay.
Gun barrel, thank you. But it's a, you know, shaken, not stirred. Right. So this is not original, but okay. You know, how many things are original?
There's a bar in here. Yeah,
yes, the bar scene is recreated. That's correct.
It's very, very clever. It's very clever.
Yeah, so we like it.
This kid Abrams has got a future, I think.
Okay. All right, do we want to say anything else about this thing? I want you to chime in. You haven't said much about this. What's your thoughts?
Oh, pretty much what I said. Harrison Ford's a lot of fun. You will get a chance to go to the bathroom. I like the pacing for the most part, but yeah, there are those slow spots, but you know, I think we had heard 2 hours and 20 minutes when we were going in, but it didn't feel that long.
And by the way, every week we have a little piece of sound from somebody, and this week we don't, because guess what? They didn't do anything to promote this film.
They did a junket.
I do have
they
a little.
No, that's not true.
Really? They certainly didn't show it to Chris until last night.
Sight unseen. People went in without seeing the movie first.
I think they showed them 20 minutes, didn't they?
No.
They
basically got the trailer.
You're kidding.
They got the trailer. Then this is due to my thanks to my LA sources, and they also released to the press, and I have access to that, what's called an EPK.
Yeah,
and they have some sound bites there, but they're actually pretty good. One of them is Harrison Ford talking about returning as Han Solo, and he was asked how he felt about it.
It might have felt silly to be going back and playing a character that you played 40 years ago, but it didn't. And it didn't because there was a clear job to be done. There was an extension of the character that I thought was interesting and would take the audience to a new place.
Then Carrie Fisher was asked how she got into character as Princess Leia.
I didn't stop being Leia. I mean, it doesn't go away. It's like a persistent rash. I have stayed in character for the last 35 years.
And finally, there's a good clip from Daisy Ridley, who was asked what she thinks girls will think of this movie.
I would love, firstly, girls to enjoy it as a whole. And secondly, from Ray, I hope they feel uplifted and hopeful and perhaps see themselves in her somewhere and feel joyful.
Well, it's funny that she said that because my 15-year-old daughter had no interest in seeing this film, and I think as buzz builds, I think there's going to be a second wave of, like, young girls who may want to go see
this movie. It's interesting that you said that because my daughter, there's so much hype surrounding this movie that my daughter, who's not interested and has never seen a Star Wars film, said, yeah, I'll go to see this because they're just making you want to see the movie. I'd like to know, do you think that it's going to be the highest grossing film of all time?
Well, it's not opening in China until January. So it's opening worldwide this weekend everywhere.
Here's what they do.
This is how they do everything, Neil. It's like it's all measured against expectations. So if it makes 10 yen less than it's supposed to in China in January, it's not a failure, but it's not the biggest grossing movie of all time. I think it probably will end up being the biggest grossing movie of all time.
What do you think?
It's within the range of possibilities, sure. It's not opening on as many many screens as some of the summer movies did, oddly enough.
Now, we saw it last night in 2D, but is it? I know they charge more money for 3D and 3D IMAX. Is there a 3D? There is a 3D version
of this
summer?
Yeah, there is.
Right. What? The 2D is fine.
Well, I hate 3D, and J.J. Abrams apparently doesn't like 3D either, so I'm glad they showed it to us in 2D last night.
Yeah. By the way, in L.A., where they had four screenings the day before we got our one screening, there were two in 3D shown and two in 2D shown.
Mm. We get one.
Well, I'm glad, again, I'm glad they showed it to us in 2D. There's two more coming. You know, when's the next one coming? 2 years from now?
I honestly don't know.
Well, if it tanks at the box office, gee, they just won't do another one.
Yeah,
no,
they're also going to be what they call spin-offs, and they're already working on those. So that I'm actually more interested in seeing.
Why no Yoda? And that's not really a spoiler. Why no Yoda?
I don't know. I mean, they have this other character I called earlier, Yoda's now a waitress. I mean, they have this woman who's sort of...
Yeah, but if J.J. Abrams is trying... Was it the waitress thing?
Did Yoda die? I don't even know.
Was it...
Yeah, maybe he come back as a hologram or something?
Well, too bad we can't get Perry back on the phone.
I think Yoda bit the Yodust.
Well, before you leave, Bill, and I know you got to cut out of here, Bill McCuddy, talk to me quickly about Goodnight Mommy.
This is a creepy, cool movie from Austria that they're giving, that's on demand, that they're putting up as actually an Oscar contender from that country if it makes the cut. This is
really cool.
A creepy, creepy, cool movie about a woman in bandages in a country home with two sons, identical twins, who begin to believe that this woman with bandages on, who's come home from the hospital, is not their mother. They start testing her on things, and slowly but surely, they decide to take matters into their own hands. They're about, what would you say, like 8 or 9?
Yeah, like 9 years old.
And so they're single digits. So they start to kind of mess with this woman in a way, and
well, you
who's going
to
get the upper hand?
A word of warning, it's very graphically violent, the last half an hour of the film. There is a twist in the film. I won't give it away, but I'm saying I did not see it coming, and it's really it's overly violent.
It's got a
but
vibe.
But it's really, it's very, very, very cool. And one more movie, Bill. Again, I know you got to run. Let's talk about this documentary with, you know, you having a stand-up comedy background.
Yeah.
Russell Brand explains it all to you about why the 1% keep getting richer and everybody else is,
this
you know.
This is kind of the English counterpart.
It's called the Emperor's
Short.
New Clothes.
Emperor's New Clothes, I would call the...
I actually interviewed the woman who directed it, and she said that he's
a handful.
He was a handful, exactly. Exactly it. But it is a kind of an interesting look into him. I don't know how completely honest he is, but the scenes that moved me the most was when he went to Africa at the height of his fame and said, why am I being a big famous person when these people are basically living in dirt?
You know, his addictions are legendary. He talks about it. And you know,
he talked to me about it.
He talks to everybody about it. And I felt like, as I said on the show, that this was part of a 12-step program PSA that he made as sort of a way to say he was sorry for some of his misgivings in the past. I don't think it's as good as The Big Short. I get that.
I think it's better than The Big Short. Because it covers a broader area, and Russell Brand
London
is a very
broader than America.
Russell Brand took a very topic that could have been a boring, bland tutorial and made it very palatable and funny. He's doing a Michael Moore kind of thing when he's busting in on people. But there's a sequence. I mean, there's some stuff. There's a sequence of a woman with multiple sclerosis that was crawling around on the floor. I don't know if that was put there for shock value.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
But I think this movie should be seen by everyone who's outraged about the economic imbalance between the 1% and everyone else. And, I think he's funny. I think he's a funny guy. All right, we're going to wrap it up. I didn't like the Malala movie. I thought that she is a fascinating, inspirational, courageous young woman.
Malala, or they named me Malala.
He named me Malala. She's an incredible young woman, fascinating, and the movie
could have... Spoken to the United Nations. The girl that got a bullet in the head and was supposed to die and live.
She won she's the youngest person ever to win the Nobel Peace Prize. But I don't think the movie did her. The movie did her justice. I think that there's a great movie to be made about this incredible young woman's story, either as another documentary or a drama, casting people in it because it's such an unbelievable story. But this guy who directed it, Davis Guggenheim, he's all over the map, and he didn't ask probing questions to her. And I think, as one of our colleagues on the show said today, if she could if she was able to survive a bullet in the head, I think she could handle a couple of probing questions. You know, she probably would have had very good answers to it as well.
Davis shot himself in the foot, is what I said.
Anyway, that's our special Star Wars show.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
I will say one more thing on Star Wars is that J.J. Abrams wisely co-wrote the script with Loras Kasdan,
right,
who co-wrote what I think is the best Star Wars film, which is The Empire Strikes Back.
My old colleague at WB Donor. He was an ad guy, and he came out of that shop.
And although this is not as good as The Empire Strikes Back, I think on many levels it succeeds, and I think it's a fun, entertaining ride, and I do recommend it. And I think that's the general consensus, not only of the people on this podcast, but I think of most critics that you'll talk to, and I think most fans will feel that way, too.
That's why we have to finish and let people run out and see it.
There you go. All right.
Go get in line.
Next week on Talking Pictures on the next week on Sitting Around Talking Movies, believe it or not, we're going to talk about Concussion with Will Smith, The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio, Joy with Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper, and Robert De Niro, and The Hateful Eight, the new Quentin Tarantino film with Kurt Russell and Walton Goggins. So you don't want to miss that one.
Please.
Anyway, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us.